Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Paramakacharya Shtota Disha Shri Shriman Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaja Srila Prabhupada Gita Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Gita Namacharya Srila Haridasa Thakura Gita Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vastavi Gaura Bhakti Vinda Gita Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kumbhara Radha Kumbhara Gita Gopinath Gita Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Navadvip Dham ki jai, Gangamay ki jai, Jamunamay ki jai, Tosi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakti ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Auspicious invocation which precedes narrations of the glories of the Lord and his associates convey the personality and the significance of those personalities who consist of the divine entourage of the Lord, which is really our only means of communion and connection and return to him. The pranamas to Srila Prabhupada describe how we offer our respectful obeisances unto him who is very dear to Lord Krishna, having taken shelter at his lotus feet. Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Vacharani, Narasesa Sunivani, Skitati Siddharani. Offers respects unto our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, servant of Saraswati Goswami, who are kindly preaching the message of Lord Chaitanya and delivering the Western countries, which are so darkened and permeated with voidism and impersonalism, Pranamastu Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Srila Prabhupada. I offer unto my spiritual master, or our Param, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, take hold of his feet. And unto all our various Siksha Gurus, who are like desire caves, begging for their mercy, which alone can remove all our sorrows. And Srila Prabhupada, in 1968, was glorifying his spiritual master. He began by continuing his explanation of that verse, which gives insight into the nature of the appearance and the disappearance of liberated souls. That verse where the sage is bestowing his benedictions of four varieties upon the four different boys. Unto the prince, Rajaputra, he blessed him. May you live forever. And Muniputra, son of the sage, may you die now. And the devotee, you can either live or die as you like, meaning that there's really no difference from the absolute perspective. And for the butcher, neither live nor die. Meaning that for the prince, so absorbed in sense gratification, which is based on sex, better live forever because you think you're enjoying it, but when you die, you'll reap the rewards of the bitter fruit of your sensuous exploits. And since sensual life is essentially sex life, receiving an appropriate body means that of a sparrow or a pigeon or a dog or however a cat, which is unfortunate because the opportunity for devotional service is not available except to extraordinary souls who for some divine arrangement take birth in those lower species. And the brahmacharya, better you die now because you're performing so much tapasya, being trained for entrance into the kingdom of God. So die, make your worthy reward. Go back to God. The devotee, either live or die as you like. Because what's the devotee doing? He reasons ill, he tells the Vaishnavas, die without living still unsound. The Vaishnavas have to live in their life. They're spreading the holy name around, so it's absolute. The coming or going, their so-called appearance or disappearance, is simply for the sake of spreading the holy name. So as they see appropriate in the service of their gurus and Krishna, they're doing what is according to the will of the Lord. And the butcher, don't live, don't die, because it's so horrible either way. Life means death of so many innocent living entities, and death means reaping the consequences of those hideous activities. So don't live, don't die. That's how Srila Prabhupada began his lecture on the disappearance day of his beloved Guru Maharaj in 1968. If we examine the sequence of events and the sequence of lives of those great Nitya Siddhas preceding and including Srila Prabhupada, we see what we've been discussing recently regarding the appearance and mission of Jesus and what preceded and followed his life as a long enactment of pastimes and personalities which come to this world to fulfill the will of the Lord. and lift our lives up into a higher picture. It's not that they just eradicate our sorrows, but they lift our lives into a larger picture in which joy is contained. And they broaden our perception, and what we perceived before as a world of obstacles becomes a realm of opportunity where everyone is potentially representing our guru and guiding us home. And that which was so oppressive before becomes liberated. And that which was so obstructive is transformed into a rhythm in which the worthy expression is dance and song. So, prior to the journey of Gauravani, Lord Gauravani's message to the West, the mission of Lord Gauranga and Prabhu Nityananda, who are likened to the sun and the moon rising simultaneously on the horizon of Gaudadesh and illuminating the world with the brilliance of that land which is touched on, where all the trees are wishful for them and everything is chintamani, revealing Braj Bhakti into this world and illuminating this darkened world with the most exalted, pure teachings. After which, in just a few short centuries, the world had become so darkened that the British Empire's Mission Impossible agent, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, High Court Magistrate, who was delegated by the British to handle impossible situations that they didn't know how to deal with, like Bishop Nixon, the pseudo Mahavishnu with his own Brahma and Shiva, who was proclaiming the destruction of the British Empire and had everybody so intimidated. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur just approached him and very humbly was pleading and preaching to him, give up this pretense and surrender. Anyway, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who had at his disposal so much power and access to, you know, so much scripture, so much ability to gain evidence, and was so expert in his giving judgment in the court that just by looking into the eyes and seeing the heart of those presented before him could understand whether they were guilty or not and give an appropriate sentence. He was never wrong. And what would take a huge team of British lawyers so long to fulfill, he could do just in a glance. But it took him 8 years of diligent investigation and inquiry to find, even in the manuscript form, one copy of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita in Bengal. That incident alone gives an illustration of how darkened the world had become within just a few centuries of the advent of Lord Gauranga. And is symbolic of how his message and teachings have been lost. And in an encyclopedia of religious thought, the movements compiled at the turn of the century describe Gaudiya Vaishnavism as a very decadent cult which perform all kind of abominable and sensual activities in the name of worship of Krishna. Which means that the compilers of that encyclopedia took the Sahajas as a representative of Lord Chaitanya's mission, which was what was widely accepted as the reality at that time. So such darkness, where the sun and moon of Lord Gauranga and Prabhu Nityananda have been eclipsed by various shadows of the British and Indian influence. So, the pure teachings of Lord Gauranga have become so eclipsed in such a short period of time that the only thread of truth remaining was in the hands of a few reclusive renunciates who weren't actively preaching the message of Lord Gauranga, although they were purely representing it in their own, lives. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur interacted with those Babaji's while simultaneously leading the life of high court magistrate who was in charge of the temple, Jagannath Puri, and was raising at the same time 12 or 13 children. And was especially noted for rediscovering the birth site of Lord Chaitanya and his movement, which had been obscured by the cultural and religious chauvinism of the times. And the movement had been so discredited by the perverse activities of the sahajas. So, it was Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur who revived the mission of Lord Gauranga and his teachings and published the writings of the six Goswamis, Lord Gauranga's own apostles, and established the timeless importance and relevance in his own songs and poems, which reveal the deepest, most intimate, ecstatic emotions and realizations of bhakti. So anyway, when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because, you know, Srila Prabhupada in his answer to inquiries, was it true that in his earlier life he was associating with impersonalists. He was delving into different religious traditions, which we see he actually incorporated in a pure sense in his own Vaishnava writings and songs. And Srila Prabhupada answered that just like Arjuna, Krishna told Arjuna, you and I have taken birth many times together. You've forgotten. So Arjuna was acting as if a little bit bewildered to set the scene for Krishna's imparting to him the divine instructions contained in Bhagavad Gita. So similarly, when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur later in his life actually came upon the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he saw that it was so far superior and so contained the essence of all previous religious teachers and religious thought and saints and prophets, and he wanted to propagate that message. But the atmosphere was so antagonistic. The world was so darkened by all these adverse elements that this whole sequence of events is so much consistent with the whole rhythm of Lord Chaitanya's advent and what preceded and followed. Prior to Lord Chaitanya's advent, it was Advaita Acharya who led that small band of Vaishnavas in an atmosphere which was so adverse, even though it was Navadvipa Dham, the Lord's eternal abode, an atmosphere so adverse to bhakti. And then he saw that the mission of establishing bhakti in such a darkened world really necessitated divine empowerment and insistence, and he prayed for the Lord to come down. And in a very similar mood and a very similar pattern of events, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur found the mission falling upon his shoulders so superhuman that he prayed for a ray of Vishnu to assist him in his mission. And the answer to his prayers came as his fourth son, who he named Bimala Prasad after the Parashakti of Lord Jagannath, his internal potency, who was noted by the astrologer as personifying the 32 symptoms of a Mahapurusha, which the astrologer said he'd never seen before, in addition to having his umbilical cord wrapped like a Brahmin thread, and golden and effulgent was the child. And the astrologer predicted that he would become world famous as a teacher and preacher of life's ultimate goal. later in that lecture, Srila Prabhupada explained how determined he was that when he was 2 or 3 years old, he took one mango and ate it. He didn't know that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura had just purchased that mango to offer the deity, and it hadn't been offered. And he very mildly chastised his son. That was meant for the deity. You should not have taken it. And this two-year-old child began to rebuke himself so severely. What evil thoughts have overcome me that I will never again touch one of these fruits? This is the proper atonement for one who has been ruled by greed. Two-year-old child. And Srila Prabhupada said, this is exemplary. This is Acharya who teaches by example that he's so determined to live in a way and teach and preach in a manner pleasing to Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada said, whenever they offer him a mango, he said, no, I cannot take. I'm an offender. And in Indian tradition, it's customary to offer mangoes to sadhus because it's the king of fruit, the most precious thing, offered in the service of, and he would not accept. Throughout his life, he adhered to that vow. Beginning his education in school, he really had no interest whatsoever in the lessons, but was very attentive to all the narrations given by his father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura. So much so that by the time he was 7 years of age, he could narrate all of Bhagavad Gita, but more wonderfully, he could explain each verse with such wisdom and insight and realization. And then a little later on in school, like high school time, he inaugurated his August assembly meant for discourse on philosophical matters. And the only intuition for entering this assembly was a vow of celibacy. And then at that time, or just after that, going to Sanskrit College, becoming very enlightened and a master of the six branches of Indian philosophy, which is the prerequisite to be a real pundit. And his teacher was so amazed at how he mastered, you know, Sanskrit grammar and the verbal roots and everything, just like Lord Garunga. Just manipulating the verbal roots to amazement of everyone. And his professor said, you should continue studying like this. He said, no, I'm not interested. This is just a secondary study, and I'm finished with it. He said, I want to dedicate my life to the single-minded cultivation of bhakti. So he dropped out of college at that time. Without graduate, just like Srila Prabhupada, didn't accept the diploma, just dropped out. And he wrote that if I continue like this, then I'll get harassed to get married, and I'm just so. But just like Lord Garunga, after mastering and showing his superiority in the world of intellect, just discarded it all as useless in and of itself, but supportive to his cause. Because in the Indian world, especially in Bengal, nobody was revered, was respected so much as the pundits. Not royalty or anybody, but the pundits were regarded with the highest esteem. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, just like Mahaprabhu, just he would memorize, not memorize, he would just read once whole libraries and recall anything at any time. And it was secondary to his preaching. But just like Mahaprabhu, he gave it all up. Because when he was a young child, he was initiated by his father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, into the worship of the Korma deity they discovered when they were digging the foundation for the temple in Calcutta. Similar to when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and it was confirmed by Jagannath Das Babaji, discovered the Yoga Pitali, excavating the footer, discovered Jagannath Mishra's own Daksha deity. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur initiated Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati to the chanting of the holy name and the worship of that Kurma deity. And then later, he was given actual diksha. He was given holy name initiation, but given his actual diksha. Because as such a pundit, all the professional gurus wanted him as their disciple to increase their prestige. But he wasn't interested in any of that. And when Gaurakishore Das Babaji came from Braj, wearing his tiger skin cap, Srila Bhakta Siddhanta Saraswati was so touched by his deep humility. And he understood that this is my guru, and he begged him for diksha. But Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji is so humble, and this pastime is just parallel to that of Narottam Das Thakur and Lokanath Goswami. Lokanath Goswami is so humble, as was Gaurakishore Das Babaji. This Siddhanta Saraswati is such a pundit, so learned, so educated. And you know, Gaurakishore Das Babaji was a relatively illiterate person, just a grain merchant in his previous existence. Very simple, very... So he was not the least bit inclined or attracted. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was begging him. His name at that time, when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati took initiation from his father, his name Varshabhanvi Devi Dayuta, the boyfriend of the daughter of Rishabhana, which is significant because Rishabhana, king of Varshana, Rishabh actually means bull. Bhana means son. Very interesting. Anyway, relevance to sun, meaning illumination. And the bull being the emblem of a glorious dynasty in that realm of the sun. So Varshabhanavi Devi Dayata Das was his name. And he was begging Gaurakishore Das Babaji for initiation. Babaji Maharaj was not inclined. He's such a learned, illustrious pundit and so influential in all. He was such a simple... But just like the continued, repeating, determined begging of Narottam Das Thakur, which finally broke the vow of Lokanath Goswami that he'd never accept disciples. Just see the whole series of lives of these acharyas, up to and including that of Srila Prabhupada, is just the same patterns of Gaur Lila being reenacted. The world goes through periods and cycles of light and dark, just like day and night and the coming of the dawn. And after the brilliance of the day reveals all things in their true nature, nighttime always follows in the material world. But light always comes again from darkness. The dawn always follows the setting of the sun. So, anyway, when he was begging, with such sincerity and humility, Babaji Maharaj, who was a little bit avadutish, you know, tried to evade, "I will have to ask Mahaprabhu. I cannot act independently. If he gives permission, then your desire will be fulfilled." So the next day, very earnestly, he asked, "Did you ask Mahaprabhu?" "I forgot." And then with determination, day after day, "Did you ask Mahaprabhu?" "I asked him, but he didn't answer. I did not receive his command." At that point, Siddhanta Saraswati, which is Varshabhanavi Devi Daita's epitaph according to his erudition, mainly in astrology, he was such an astrologer. But then his heart was breaking. And he said that you, in Lord Chaitanya, worship the crest jewel of the Bhachis, Krishna, so why should you have mercy on me? But if there's no mercy, weeping and weeping,
cannot sustain my life. And he was crying. And Gorkha Sharka's brother just told me he was on the verge of giving up his life, thinking that without Diksha, life is meaningless. And then Gorkha Sharka's Babaji's heart was just melted by this response. And he told him, go take a bath in the river and then come back to him in the Saraswati and come back, at which time... Actually, that was the time when he got the name Varshavanavi Devi. Daita Das. And Siddhartha Saraswati was an epithet in recognition of his erudition, but that was largely in astrology, in astronomy. And he would make these astrological predictions, which are always right, and he would, but before taking them seriously, he would present them to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura. And just like Srila Prabhupada, if anybody offered him some astrological advice, if he liked it, say, oh yes, this is Krishna's will. If he saw it as irrelevant, he just discarded it. But in this case, we have the most learned astrologer the world has ever known. And if Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura liked it, he'd say, yes, this is Krishna's will. But if he didn't see it was supportive to Krishna's will, he'd just discard it as useless. The passing away of Gaura Kishoredas Babaji was a very illuminating event. Because all the custodians of the various temples wanted to have his eternally blissful form to put into samadhi, because that would be very conducive to their fundraising. So all the temple managers converged on the spot where Babaji Maharaj's eternally blissful form lay on the ground waiting to be claimed. And then the police came to understand that this was a very volatile situation, because all the managers knew that whoever got the samadhi would have the best advantage in fundraising. So the inspector of police came there expecting potential major conflict. And then word was carried to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who immediately appeared on the scene barefoot, and at that time Chaturmasi with long hair and beard. And he said that since I'm his only disciple, I will claim his body. And the so-called Babaji's responded that, but you're not a sannyasi, therefore you do not have the eligibility to place his eternally blissful form in samadhi. And he said, although I'm not a sannyasi, I am a brahmachari, and by the grace of Paramahamsa Babaji Maharaj, I have not become addicted to the abominable habits of fornication and interaction with Matajis. So, if any one of you Babajis can claim that for 1 year you have not had illicit intimate connection with women, you can claim the body. And the police commissioner said, well, how are you going to know if they're truthful? And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, I'll have faith in their words, because if they're not true to their words, they will be destroyed. And then they were all intimidated. So he said, 6 months. Anyone who is 6 months, or 3 months, or 3 days has not had illicit connection with women can take his body. At which, when he got it down to 3 days, all those in Babaji attire turned and walked away, leaving only the chief of police there, totally astonished. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that, oh, and then there was another controversy, because they said it was Babaji Maharaj's desire that his body being dragged through the streets of Navadvip to be purified from the dust of that holy realm before being placed in samadhi. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati replied that, although we are fools, inexperienced in such matters, and offenders too, we will not be declined to understand the deep humility saturating those words spoken by Gurudev in order to destroy the pride of worldly-minded persons. Because even Krishna Chandra himself yearns to claim the body of Gurudev and take it upon his lap or on his shoulders or upon his head. And he is referring to, or uses an example, the disappearance of Haridas Thakur, in which Lord Gauranga claimed his body, danced with that holy form on his lap, and personally placed Haridas Thakur in samadhi. So that put an end to the second part of the controversy, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati claimed the spiritually blissful form of his Guru Maharaj and placed it in samadhi. So, it was Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's desire, and he sent Lord Chaitanya's life and precepts to inaugurate his desire of the message of Lord Gauranga going to the Western worlds. It was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati who assisted him in his printing, in his editing and printing of the books, and when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was touring all over in Cuttack, he inspired that professor, Sanyal, who began a three-volume set depicting the life and teachings of Lord Gauranga in such a way as would definitely impress the intellectuals and philosophers. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gave that order. In fact, Srila Prabhupada commented that when he was literally dragged by his friend, because he was the leader of his little band of friends, and nobody would, but they were so impressed with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who was teaching in Calcutta, which was the epicenter of intellectual and cultural and philosophical thought and debate. And when he was preaching there, and Srila Prabhupada's friends told him that this is a real exalted sadhu, and Srila Prabhupada wasn't inclined, because he'd seen so many of them as a child. His father would invite like a dozen every day to honor the culture of having sadhus come to his home, and he would serve them with such humility and love, and only ask for one thing: bless my son, he may become servant of Srimati Radharani and preacher of the Bhagavad. So Srila Prabhupada was not impressed, because he said they were largely a disappointing bunch, hypocrites really. He didn't want to go up with his friend there and dragged him. And when they went in the presence of the sadhu and paid obeisances, before even getting up, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati told him, "You're intelligent boys, go preach in the Western world." And Srila Prabhupada was amazed. He hadn't even gotten up. They hadn't been introduced. They hadn't gotten up from paying obeisances. And this Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has given him his life's mission. So immediately Srila Prabhupada challenged in a humble way, because in his own words, he said, "At that time I was a nationalist, follower of Gandhi, in the name of Swaraj." And he challenged, not in an arrogant way, in a very humble way, because it was the most worthy question that anyone would want to have answered at that time. That the whole of India was enslaved and enraged at the oppression of the British. I said, how is a slave going to broadcast the message of Lord Gauranga worldwide? First, let us obtain our liberation, our Swaraj, and then we can preach, and then people will listen. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, no. The message of Lord Gauranga is independent of any political climate, and it's urgent, it cannot wait. And Srila Prabhupada echoed these words in his own paraphrase, that in that same lecture, 1968, he was saying that you're, toward the end of his lecture, you're saying, "You have all come to assist me.
you're a representative of Naguru Maharaj. And then he began to cry.
So then, after giving his life instructions, Srila Prabhupada took prasad and was served with such love and care by the Gaudiya Mata devotees. His heart was touched. So when they came out, and his friend Naren asked, "What do you think?" He said, "The message of Lord Gauranga is in the most worthy hands. He is a real sadhu." And Srila Prabhupada said, "I accepted him then and there. Not officially, but in my heart, as my guru." So the force of intellect, which is beyond the ability of mortals to embody, enthuses the great souls who are surrendered to the mercy of the Lord, and is proof of the Lord's inexhaustible merciful blessings upon them. The divine powers descending in and through the words of the Guru Parampara. And the life of these great devotees is so enriched with the sweetness of loving devotion and humility that it can attract our hearts away from the thraldom of illusion. And we become attracted by their compassion. And Krishna refuses to accept the worship of those who neglect his devotees, because it betrays a pride that we think we can commune with the Lord without the blessings and the mercy of his agents. So hearing the lives of these great souls awards the deepest satisfaction and hope and joy to the heart. And it washes away all the darkness and despair and sin and selfishness which separates us from the light and love of Lord Ramana's mission. And the Lord's deputed agents in this world are so deeply enriched and endowed with forgiveness that when they pray for our salvation, Krishna takes notice and begins working in our lives. Just like when Srila Prabhupada had his business in Allahabad, and the Gaudiya Mata devotees came there and looked him up, and he was so happy to be able to serve them and make his house into a preaching center. And then, describing this incident in his lecture, Srila Prabhupada said, "When I began serving them, then my business began failing, my family life started falling apart. Yasyahama nagrami harishirita dadamshina." And Krishna took direct action in his own life. Because Krishna cannot resist the heart-rending prayers of his devotees. And when they favor us, Krishna takes charge of our lives and activates and orchestrates everything in creation to bring us home. And that's why in his lectures about Guru Tattva, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was emphasizing toward the end of his lila that we should be trained, that when we actually engrave words and instructions of Guru Dev in our hearts, then we see and hear Guru in everyone and everything. And then he quoted the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where the gopis are going to every leaf and every tree and every bush and every creeper and every deer and everything and everyone, asking, "Have you seen Krishna? Where has he gone?" And by their message or their silence or the wind or the direction or whatever, they would indicate, they're all directing us towards Krishna. Because Guru is Krishna, that divine energy which unites us with Krishna and works in and through everything and everyone in creation. But we must actually engrave the instructions of Guru in our hearts and protect it from anarthas and material desires, which again darkens our lives with our previous kind of relapse in order to hear and see this divine message resounding throughout everyone and everything in creation. So, just hearing the lives of the devotees and their appearance and disappearance days and their samadhis are so imbued with this divine energy that it washes away all the envy and enmity and hatred and ego and darkness in our hearts and makes them malleable to the will of Krishna, which is conveyed only through the words and the instructions of his representatives. When Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati actually started dispatching his disciples to preach in the West, they had some success in England because, you know, Lord Zetland and others had already been very much impressed with Indian culture. And they had pictures taken with dignitaries and gave many lectures which had some kind of response. And they actually brought back two German bhaktas who became Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's very good disciples. Because Germans, you know, they really appreciate the finest. They're very astute in analyzing what is really the ultimate in anything. And they accepted that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's teaching, Lord Gauranga's mission, is the essence, which also harmonizes all other varieties of and excels all other forms of spiritual realization. But as some devotees noticed, these preachers in the West, these first preachers in the West, although endowed with superhuman intellect, they didn't have what Srila Prabhupada had as far as implicit faith in the Holy Name. Which means that he really personified the essence of his guru's teachings. And he conveys it to this day to anyone who takes his instructions as their life and soul. So toward the end of his lila, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati began manifesting his prophetic abilities, understanding there would be so much oppression, so much opposition, and really emphasizing humility and love and working together. His later instructions are very illuminating as far as condensing the essence of all his previous instructions. Just before leaving this world, at which time he actually wrote Srila Prabhupada again, responding to his letter, Anugrihasta, how can I really assist you? And he told the other devotees, in time he will do everything. And just encouraged him again, just, if you ever get money, print books and dedicate your life to preaching in the Western world. And Srila Prabhupada also commented that many times he would appear to me in a dream as that effulgent sannyasi beckoning, come with me. And Srila Prabhupada understood, he's beckoning, I take sannyasi. It's horrible, in Prabhupada's own words. This is horrible. Why is Guru Maharaj saying? Because Srila Prabhupada said, I was thinking I'd be successful in business and make money and print books. But so, concluding all his previous teachings, presenting their essence just before leaving this world, he said, emphasize with great enthusiasm, preach the message of Sri Rupa and Raghunath to everyone. Because our ultimate goal is just to be dust at the lotus feet. What does this mean? Sri Rupa is so... Sri Rupa amongst the Manjis, the very young, innocent, most pristine embodiment of selflessness in the entourage of Radha and Krishna. Sri Rupa Manji is in charge of newcomers into the entourage of the Lord, which means preaching. Reclaiming from conditioned souls, training them for entrance into the Nityalila of the Lord. All of you remained united, he emphasized, in allegiance to the Ashraya Vigraha, the shelter-giving devotee of the spiritual master, in order to satisfy the transcendental senses of Sri Krishna. And he forewarned, do not give up the worship of Hari despite hundreds of dangers, hundreds of insults, and hundreds of persecutions. The line of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur will never be closed. And he emphasized all the more with enthusiasm, which attracts the empowerment of Guru and Krishna, preach. Because the desire of the line of Bhaktivinoda Thakur will never be closed, and with ever more enthusiasm, you should become engaged and stay engaged in preaching the desire of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's heart. And then he paraphrased in his own words the Shikshastakam, especially Trinada Pisani Jena and Taradas Pisaneshna. So in the morning of December 31st, 1936, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati requested Srila Sridhar Maharaj to sing indicating his the destination he was yearning to achieve. And Naveen Krishna Das to sing Shikshastakam. And then requesting all his bodies to form and follow the GBC to manage. Because he really emphasized Brihat Madanga, the big Madanga, which would have a sustaining, a widespread and sustaining message, meaning books, and an institution, which means headaches. But it's necessary for the ongoing and widespread preaching. So this is the compassion of the true devotees of Godhead. So then he proclaimed his blessings to all present and absent and reminded, bear in mind, our sole duty in religion is to propagate service to the Lord and his devotees. And then that Simha Guru, that tireless preacher, the ray of Vishnu, which illuminated or inaugurated the illumination of the Western world, set again. As he returned at the same time Jagannath Babaji did, to the service of his Lord in his pastimes with his divine mistress, when they are embraced in such tight affection as to be symbolic of Lord Gauranga. And actually in that very sacred, special temple of Nidivan, Lord Chaitanya's form and mission was first revealed in that dream of Srimati Radharani, which when she explained it to Krishna, saying how all these devotees on the bank of some river in a land which resembled my own but was different were chanting this name of Gauranga. And when I hear this name, I feel the same stirring into my soul as hearing your name. Who is this? I feel that it's you. And it's also me containing that name. And Krishna just smiled and touched his kastuba, which revealed the meaning for her to see that their lila, Radha and Krishna, is contained, is not different from that of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But there is a difference, not in essence, but in emphasis. Radha and Krishna's lila is the manifestation of Madhurya, that sweetness, beauty, and charm which captivates the hearts of their servants, making them solely dedicated to their every whim and will and pleasure. Avodah is the counterpart of that sweetness of love. And as Srila Bhagavatam Thakur himself explains, each is contained in the other in full. But sometimes one takes prominence. When Madhurya takes prominence, that's Braj. When Audarya, magnanimity, mercy, preaching takes prominence, that's Navadvipa, that's Gauravila. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, at the same time that Jagannath Babaji entered into the service of the Lord as he rests with Srimati Radharani and Nidivan, at that hour in the pre-dawn Leela, in which they're so tightly embraced as to convey, as to personify, how they're inseparable in the form of the golden avatar, their inseparable love, from which flows the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, and comes through his devotees. Because the blessings of Krishna and Lord Duranga only follows in the wake of the blessings of his devotees. So this current of Lord Duranga's love is ever flowing into this world. But it comes in cycles. Because the rising of the sun and its travels to the Western world, it also sets. But from darkness, light always returns. And she says, Srila Prabhupada lamenting that when his guru left, the world was again plunged into the darkness. And Srila Prabhupada said, I cried in such grief. And similarly, when Srila Prabhupada departed from our earthly vision, it was again as if darkness had just eclipsed all our hopes and dreams and aspirations. But the very essence of Lord Gauranga's teachings, the very essence of rasa, is love and separation, in which the external world just becomes eclipsed by an internal realization that we're really never separate from our Lord and Master, Srila Prabhupada. Inasmuch as we adhere faithfully and strictly with single-minded devotion to his instructions, we'll never be bereft of his guidance and companionship. He reasons ill who tells the Vaishnavas die, and their living still and sound. The Vaishnavas die to live. In living, they try to spread the holy name around. So die to live means, as the false ego dies, and there is darkness to our external perception, the eternal light of the life of the soul begins to, again, take prominence in our consciousness. So these cycles go on in the universe, in darkness, in which, again, the sun always rises in the east, conveying its illumination to the Western world in time. But actually, as all the previous acharyas in Bharatvarsha personified and taught and proclaimed to the world the glory of the individual rasa with Krishna, which alone possesses the ability to captivate the Lord's mind, and proclaimed it to the world, reaching Western shores and times and inaugurating Western religions to follow. The teachings of rasa in the instructions of Lord Gauranga with Ramananda Rai culminate in the love and separation which awakens a relationship which can, in which even death does not have the last word. And that's why this love and separation is so precious. The Vapu, which is so important as far as learning proper dealings with Vaishnavas and service to everyone and preaching and etiquette and interactions, is so precious. But in time, must pass away to give prominence to a more deeper, more sustaining relationship, which even death cannot sever, that love and separation, which Srila Prabhupada personified in a life of dedication
in fulfilling the order of his spiritual master and leaving such a precious guiding light for others to follow. In that, taking the instructions, the Vani of Gurudev, as our guiding light in life, will ensure that we're never bereft of his company, his inspiration, his guidance, as we conclude our sojourn in this dark world and prepare to enter the land of eternal light. In the association of Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas in their divine service to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Radha and Krishna. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? There's always circumstances in the lives of the great souls that is somewhat bewildering to all our conceptions. And ultimately, we have to judge by the fruits. You judge a tree by its fruits, which means also you ultimately judge any action by its fruits. Because to him, this Guru Maharaj is perfectly present in his picture. But that may do for sannyas, but it'll never do for diksha, which necessitates a living embodiment of a guide. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati did not find anyone, you know, bestowing sufficient inspiration for this intense commitment of sannyas. So he accepted from his Guru Maharaj, who had already departed. But to judge by the fruit, he was contemplating that for empowerment and success in preaching sannyas is essential. And that empowerment was definitely personified in the rest of his lila, which is testimony that his sannyas initiation was authorized and empowered with the actual blessings of his sannyas guru. So, judge by the fruit.
At the same time, he also adopted the dress of a Tridandi. So, took the external dress of a Tridandi sannyas in order to. That was part of the revival of respect for preaching that mission.
Yeah. Yeah, he was so much inspired by Ramanuja Santa, right? In their Tridandi sannyas function, which, so he revived the dignity and sanctity of that ashram. What's that? Guru Tattva, Dham Tattva, and Shiva Tattva are very difficult realizations to grasp. But just as we were saying in the interactions between Jesus and Judas,
It's very interesting, actually. I just touched upon it last time, but and the Last Supper, you know, this custom amongst those Vaishnavas, you know, they would really commune during a meal, and they would express loving exchanges by breaking the bread and dipping it into something and handing it to one another. So Jesus did that. He broke the bread, you know, dipped it into the bowl or whatever it was, and handed it to Judas and told him, whatever you have to do, do it quickly. And then Judas ran off into the night. Everybody's, he must have some mission for him. And they came back with the guards. So Jesus was aware that he would be betrayed, and he revealed. And actually, he could have avoided the whole thing. As, was it Luke tells it? I believe, or was it John? I can't remember. But anyway, they could have escaped from Jerusalem, gone back to Galilee. Jesus knew what was coming. But he knew that he had to enter into that. He had to undergo that suffering to actually manifest his calling. As we all do. We have to enter into the darkness and the suffering if we really want to manifest our calling. So anyway, Guru Tattva is one of the truths which, along with Dham Tattva and Shiva Tattva, are very difficult to grasp. But basically, it means, as Judas personifies the antithesis, we really have to attentively hear and inquire sufficiently to really understand what is our Guru's message. We have to really get a clear understanding, not an intellectual one. Intellect is useful, but ultimately, a very humble submission of the heart will convey the essence of truth in regards to Guru Tattva. Be conveyed through a very humble, submissive, inquiring heart, which begins by understanding what is Guru really trying to convey? Do I really understand his instructions properly? Because any misunderstanding, any misrepresentation will ultimately manifest in a betrayal, which really means betrayal of oneself. Whereas imbibing his message in our hearts and containing it, protecting it submissively and carefully, and fortified with strict sadhana, that will really convey his message and his mission and his spirit so that it can grow and be personified and conveyed in our own lives. And when our understanding and when the spirit is really substantially conveyed like that, then you progress into the realm that Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati was revealing when he was reciting Caitanya Charitamrita as far as the gopis, going to every leaf, every tree, every bird, every creeper, every everything. And just the direction of the breeze or the movement of the deer or whatever indicated the path to Krishna. Now, you know, the deer weren't saying anything and the creepers weren't really expressing, but because when you really imbibe the spirit and the teachings of Guru in your heart, then you'll find it confirmed and affirmed, and it becomes a visualization in your consciousness, and everything you perceive becomes an affirmation, a confirmation, a visualization of Gurudeva's teachings. Everything's saying the same thing. When you take that one commitment to his words, it's your life and soul, then as that internal realization blossoms into everything you say and do and perceive and every interaction you have, it all becomes a living reality where Guru is with you at all times. And as Srila Prabhupada said in that lecture to the devotees, you're represented as my Guru. He started crying, meaning that he was seeing us as his Guru. What does that mean? You know, these Western people, so uncivilized and uneducated and uncultured, barbaric. And Prabhupada, just because, you know, we felt some attraction to Srila Prabhupada to come and hear and follow, he was saying, that you've come to assist me in my service to Guru. You're his representatives. He was saying that the devotees were representatives of his Guru Maharaj. So that's another personification, an example of what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was teaching in his explanation from Chaitanya Charitamrita, that when you really imbibe the message and spirit of Gurudev in your hearts, then you'll see as an affirmation, confirmation, and visualization, everything is pointing in the same direction. But you'll never get that indication without really engraving his words within your heart and submissively containing them and protecting them with the fortification of good sadhana and strong humility. And then, gradually, you'll see that everyone and everything is conveying the same message. It's directing me back to the service of Guru and Krishna in the spiritual world. As it was once said, if you have many gurus, you have no guru. But if you really surrender to one guru, then you have many gurus. Which means, you know, some people they'll take some wisdom from here and there and everywhere, but they won't really surrender or dedicate their lives to anybody. So they may say they got many gurus, but they don't really have any. But if you really surrendered and dedicated to one, then guru is everywhere and working through everyone, whether they realize it or actually convey it or not. But in your perception, it'll be revealed how everyone and everything is working to direct us back to home, back to God. But it all begins by accepting the order of Guru as one's life and soul. And, you know, containing that within your heart, the most precious, sacred place of your being. Protecting it from, you know, my sadhana and humility, which grants, you know, divine protection for our little infinitesimal jiva attempts. And then you'll see that throughout all creation, everything and everyone is echoing the same message. Whether they know it or mean it or not, we'll have the perception to understand and follow the instructions of the Gurudev and actually imbibe what Srila Prabhupada was saying when he that revolutionary remark, "Your representatives are my Guru Maharaj." How could he say that? Because he had such deep humility and conviction and commitment to his guru that he was seeing in everyone and everything. And that's love.
And this point of being able to focus on the instruction of the spiritual master, I think that we're in a unique situation as part of a worldwide institution.
Yeah.
So it may be that you find yourself in a position where you want desperately to focus on your research and master's instruction, but the demands of the institution may require you to also assist in a kind of a bigger picture. So I guess the question is, how does one understand how to balance those two realities?
Well, there's three major manifestations of Guru. There's Krishna, there's the Acharya, and there's Super Soul. So, when we're placed into apparently conflicting predicaments, where we may know Gurudev's instruction for a certain place and a certain time, or say a certain place, but the timing is not right. Because to really commit yourself to that instruction at that time would violate relationships, violate love and trust, which means a violation of a more crucial matter. Then you have to work with the time along with the place and the circumstance and the instruction. Because we see in the final instructions of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, as with the final instructions of Srila Prabhupada, after they gave every other conceivable instruction regarding a 10,000-year worldwide mission, they really emphasized love and trust. So, there are some of us here in New Vrindavan that understood, that heard and understood that Srila Prabhupada's instructions for this particular place, because he gave so many instructions in so many places, but here he really emphasized, you know, I'll paraphrase, but it was basically a communion with the environment. That sambandha means not only, you know, relationship with Krishna is a very narrow, because relationship with Krishna, sambandha means relationship with the environment. In a farm, in a rural community, which is meant to be a replica of Vrindavan, there should be communion between all aspects of nature, and the land, and the cows, and the oxen, should all be engaged in a sankirtan. Sankirtan can mean, you know, it means everyone engaged in the chanting. And it also means all elements engaged in the chanting. Which means nothing can be left out. The nature, the fields, the oxen, they all have to be engaged according to their natural propensity. And there are certain, you know, Vrindavasins who live this life and understand this, but in present circumstances, to be too enthusiastic in pursuing that aspect of Gurudev's instructions might violate the love and trust of the evolution of the Dhamma and what's transpiring in any particular circumstance and time. So therefore, after giving all these instructions on such a wide range of activities in such a wide range of places and circumstances, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Srila Prabhupada came back again to the very essence, the most crucial emphasis of instruction, which is love and trust and cooperation. Because someone may be very gifted and very realized and very empowered and able to fulfill the very things he emphasized here. But if that is not done with utmost sensitivity to everyone else's mission and calling and realization, to the extent that you would violate the deeper sacraments in most tender intricacies of love and trust, then everything is lost. Whereas to proceed with faith in our particular realization, but in utmost sensitivity in everyone else's realization, and the time factor of how it's all unfolding, will ensure that we will be instrumental in the fulfillment of what we understand as the most essential teachings for a particular place. So it's very wonderful how our acharyas and Krishna himself would give, you know, instructions that would just cover everything. But as they prepare to culminate and terminate their earthly lila, get to the most essential, crucial elements, which have to be honored above and beyond all others, and which by adhering to, all others will be fulfilled. So love, trust, and cooperation were the final themes of their teachings in this world, which we have to take as the last word in their instructions, the most important. And simultaneously, very hopeful, because by adhering to that is the essence, everything else will be fulfilled in time. Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to preach in the West, he wanted to print books, but he had so many encumbrances with family and business and everything, which all failed. But since he was, you know, so humble and so committed in his relationships, that ultimately he was, you know, most glorious and successful in the preaching in the West. So we know that Srila Prabhupada had a certain vision for New Vrindavan, and sometimes that gets eclipsed by other priorities. So we have to be sensitive to, you know, the time and the circumstance and the management and the leadership and everything else, so as to not to violate the most crucial dimensions of relationship. But be very hopeful and enthusiastic by adhering to the most sacramental teachings, all these will be fulfilled in time. Anything else? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Bhakti Saranta Saraswati Prabhupada. He's the best way to say Sri Bhakti Vinayaka Swami
Prabhupada.
Enlightened. Ah. The ego just loves those kind of words.
You should know you appreciate them.
Okay, so 10 minutes for meeting, huh? Okay.